Is it fair to say Keane Lynch is your hurler of the year?
I just say, Keane, here's the trophy. That's it. I wouldn't even give three names. I just say Keane Lynch is hurler of the year. And like, it was so good, give it to him next year.
OTB AM. Live weekday mornings from 7:30 on the OTB Sports app.
Yeah, you're welcome along. Joe Malloy with you this evening. So 11 years ago now, Nicky Quaid joined the Limerick panel. At that stage, you might remember, a bunch of the senior players didn't want to play for the manager. And Nicky was also an outfield player. It's fair to say a bit has changed since then. We're going to chat to the Limerick goalkeeper at 7:30 about his three All-Irelands now in 4 years. Dan McDonald along for the football show, as is Philippe Auclair. Extraordinary scenes in Nice at the weekend. Match was abandoned. Fans on the pitch. There was kind of a malice at the Palace vibe to the whole thing. We will have Aidan Agayon on the show as well. Aidan is from Clondalkin, County Dublin, and he will talk to us about his quest to make it in the NBA, and he's planning to do it very, very soon. So he's with us just after 8 o'clock. Really charismatic character, well worth a listen. Aidan Agayon on the way after 8 o'clock. Plus, the Paralympics get underway overnight. We'll bring you Ellen Keane in conversation with her fellow swimmer Nicole Turner. That's on the way just after 8:30 or so. 53106, the text number. We are at Off the Ball on Twitter. Richie McCormack, hello to you.
Evening, Joe.
And I know, Richie, you're excited. I'm excited. Always great when the big man's with us. Dave McIntyre, hello.
Hi, lads. How are we doing?
We are very well. Nicky Quaid, Dave, joined Limerick 11 years ago. He was an outfield player then. And like I said, a bunch of the players weren't too keen on playing for the manager then. And within a year, he was moved into goals, and the rest is history and all that. So looking forward to hearing from him just after 7:30 or so. And he's had an extraordinary career. At 32, he's the old man out there on that Limerick team.
Yeah, he is. It's incredible, really. And in terms of goalkeeping, look, he could probably feel that he's got 5 or 6 years ahead of him. We see how long the likes of Brendan Cummins went on for, Damien Fitzhenry, two of the greats of the last 25 years that played well into their 30s. So I would imagine Nicky Quaid has no thoughts of retirement anytime soon. I remember commentating for Setanta Sports on the Allianz Hurling League back then, when Limerick were playing with essentially what was their second panel. And that was grim. It was an awful time for Limerick Hurling. There was a lot of pressure on some of the younger guys to keep playing. There was a lot of pressure on some of the older guys not to consider coming back. It was a terrible time for their manager, obviously. And now some would say that he should have stepped away a little bit earlier, but I'm sure he has would have a different view on that. But when you think 10 years ago how grim things were for Limerick Hurling, bar a couple of All-Ireland under 21 titles, they had really nothing to speak of. They hadn't won a Munster title since 1996. They were nowhere close to an All-Ireland final, given that they had got to one just 4 years prior to that in 2007. And you think of some of the saves Nicky Quaid has made over the last few years, most notably that one against Cork a couple of years back, which is up there with one of the saves of the 21st century. He's probably one of the most underrated unsung type heroes in that Limerick team. A lot of the headlines go to the likes of Keane Lynch and to the Morrisseys and to Gillan and to Seamus Flanagan, but Nicky Quaid wasn't keeping house at the back. There would be a different story in some games at least.
Yeah, it's true. So he's on the way at 7:30. I mentioned at 8 o'clock we're talking to Aidan Agayon. Are you familiar with his story at all, Dave?
I'm not, but you've sold it well there at the top of the show, so I'll be listening.
Well, so Aidan Agayon is from Clondalkin, County Dublin. He is vying to be the second ever Irish-born player to make it in the NBA, the first being Pat Burke with Orlando Magic. Pat was born in Ireland and moved to the US at the age of 4. I think father from Mayo, mum from Offaly. But Aidan Agayon, his parents Nigerian, his mother moved to Ireland in around 2000 or so. So basically, he was a soccer player. He was a central midfielder. He was all about football, and the Dublin Lions got hold of him, and he started playing a little bit of basketball, but not much. And then I suppose where life happens and strange things happen, there was like a Philadelphia Sixers camp, which he went over to with the Dublin Lions at the age of 13. Now, at this stage of 13, he was 6'5", which, you know, is big, but there's still no guarantees you'll make it or whatever. But he was spotted over there by a bunch of coaches who thought he really had something. And so in the end, he stayed from that point on and went to high school at the Lawrence Woodmere Academy from 2014 on. And he graduated high school as the 55th ranked best player in the country for his age, which, by the way, he thinks is an outrage. He's like, there's no way I was 55. I was a lot better than 55. But anyway, and now he's in his second year of university. He's in Arizona, and they're expecting big things, and he could well be Ireland's second born player in the NBA, which is quite exciting. Really charismatic fella, really likable, and kind of an extraordinary just quirk of events that up until 12 years of age, he was all about football, all about playing in central midfield, and then was playing basketball a year. The Dublin Lions go over to Philadelphia. Someone likes the cut of his jib, and suddenly he ends up staying over there, and he's been over there now, obviously, for 7 or 8 years. So he's on the way after 8 o'clock. Amazing story, and we're looking forward to having him on. Had you heard of him,
Rich? 6 foot 10, Joe.
6 foot 10 now. Yeah. He grew.
Pretty good job in the centre of the field.
Yeah, he kept growing. Had you heard of him, Rich?
I hadn't, no. And to be honest with you, I'm always wary of somebody who makes me feel like, I'm stunted in terms of growth, because I would have been quite taller in there and would have been quite taller growing up. But I wasn't 6'5" when I was his age, nor am I 6'10" now. But like, an incredible journey to go on. And it shows what's possible when those kind of opportunities. I guess we see it a little bit in terms of Aussie rules, when players over here get scouted for another sport that they've never played over yonder. But he's obviously played basketball here, but it shows what's possible and what's capable, and those pathways and avenues are opened up to kids of a younger age.
You know the way when in your teenage years, if you're into your sport, you just have sudden spurts where you can do things you couldn't do before? So it's quite funny when he talks about going over for this little camp with the Philadelphia Sixers, with the Dublin Lions, when he was 13. Basically, he had never been able to slam dunk in his life, even at 6'5", but at 13 years of age, had never been able to slam dunk. And on the morning of the first day of camp, he was just suddenly able to slam dunk.
it's just handy, that.
It's like a scene out of a movie. All his friends are looking over at him going, when did you start slam dunking? So,
Did you find, Joe, in your teens that you could suddenly do that you couldn't do before?
David, we're moving on.
The long pause is amazing. Wow.
What is that pause for?
I don't want to talk about this situation anymore.
I'm talking about something that you've managed to achieve on the sporting field that you weren't able to do when you were a little bit younger. I'm not sure what you have in your mind.
I've nothing in my mind. There was a look on your face there which I didn't appreciate.
My word.
Right, let's get out of this hole, because
that you've dug for yourself.
Yeah, big time, yeah. Big time. Oh, dear. Right, we'll start the news round with thanks to Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. Richie, where are we starting?
We'll start with Tokyo. The 16th Summer Paralympic Games officially underway. Brittany Renzi and Jordan Lee carry the Irish tricolour in Tokyo for today's opening ceremony. But it's swimmer Barry McClements who will be the first Irish athlete into action. He goes in the pool tomorrow morning at 1:06 a.m. Irish time. Nicole Turner is also in the pool overnight, and she's looking forward to what will be her second Paralympic Games.
Looking back on Rio, I was the baby of the team going around. Like, I didn't really care. I think Tokyo will be a bit more serious, but serious in a good way, but then I'll still be able to enjoy myself as well. All the hard work's done. It's just about getting there and getting ourselves there safely and then actually stepping up and racing. And I think the key for me is to enjoy myself and not overthink it. And once I enjoy myself, I always bring out the best.
We're going to bring a lot more Nicole Turner in conversation with Ellen Keane. That's just after 8:30 or so. So Ellen Keane will be talking to a couple of the Paralympic athletes over the course of the game. So we'll be bringing you those interviews over the next couple of days. By the way, Dave, I feel like you asked that question very innocently. It was Pete who started laughing here out of the corner of my eye, which just threw me badly.
Huh? Blame other people, especially when Pete doesn't have a microphone to defend himself.
Pete is laughing right now. He knows. He threw me. He threw me.
Yet another high-profile radio presenter that throws the producer under the bus on air.
It's all I can do right now, yeah. So that is the Paralympics. Like I said, Ellen Keane chatting to Nicole Turner later on in the show. Premier League's, this is like a decision en masse about international break. Basically, bunch of players won't be going anywhere.
Yeah, we saw this coming essentially yesterday when Liverpool were going to stop Mo Salah from travelling to Egypt, would allow him to travel to Gabon because Egypt's on the red list and Gabon isn't for the upcoming African Nation Cup qualifiers. But Premier League clubs have decided reluctantly but unanimously not to release international players for duty in countries on Britain's red travel list. Players returning from such countries will be required to isolate for 10 days. So the Premier League clubs have said no. 60 players from 19 Premier League clubs are scheduled to travel to 26 different red list countries during the upcoming international window.
Reluctantly but unanimously. I mean, one of those things is true, Dave.
Yeah, I would say they might argue otherwise, and maybe the otherwise is the case, but I wouldn't imagine it was a conversation that lasted all that long. I'd say they managed to get to whatever the next bullet point on their agenda was pretty quickly. But yeah, they'll argue that they have a case, but I mean, yeah, you're probably as likely to catch COVID-19 in the UK at the moment as you are in many of the countries that are on the red list. And you're probably as likely to catch COVID in many of the countries that some other Premier League players will be travelling to as you are in the UK at the moment. So I would say some of these countries in South America and Africa and elsewhere across the world will be feeling pretty hard done by if they have to go into a crucial World Cup qualifier without their star player, Egypt, without Mo Salah, for example. Mm. Imagine the difference that makes to them.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's the requirement to isolate for 10 days, which is kind of the issue here. FIFA, UEFA changed the rule. Once it goes beyond a requirement to isolate for more than 5 days, then there's no obligation on the clubs to release them. I mean, you can't really have a bunch of players coming back and then self-isolating for 10 days. It is a lot to ask of the clubs. So that news just in the last couple of hours or so. We have some word on the managerial situations in the hurling, Rich.
Yeah, Brian Lowen is going to continue as Clare hurling manager for another 3 years. He'd come to the end of his original two-year term with their season ended by All-Ireland qualifier defeat to Cork. Lowen told Clare FM this morning that the length of his proposed new term was his idea, and he wants to bring the county's level up to that of sides like Limerick.
You know, we felt that we had good players, and it was, I suppose, looking at setups around the country, you know, there is very professional setups out there. And we probably needed to get to a different level, because the game is constantly moving on, and you know we can see that over the weekend there. You know we've seen the performance of the Limerick lads inside, like, and how professional their setup is, and the kind of advice that they have access to. So it's trying to move that, move it in Clare up to that kind of level, because you know, we think we have got the quality of players, and we think we have that potential. But you know, it takes a huge amount of hard work, obviously.
So that's Clare with their business. We're hearing some kind of word from Tipperary. They've made their approach anyway.
The word is that Liam Cahill is going to make a decision on his future this week, Joe. He's reportedly been approached by the Tipperary County Board to replace the recently retired Liam Sheedy. Cahill also held discussions with Waterford officials about possibly extending his original two-year term with the Dacia.
Dave, how do you see the hurling next year? It doesn't feel like anyone looks in all that much of a position to properly threaten Limerick. It looks like they're raging hot favourites again next year, unless there's someone I'm just not thinking of here.
Well, there isn't a county that you're not thinking of. I mean, I guess the sort of discussion you'd have with yourself and hurl people is what county is best positioned in terms of the arsenal they have at the moment to at least be in second position or to challenge Limerick for 35 minutes at least. Tipperary fans would argue they put up the biggest challenge to them given the first half they produced in Munster, but I mean, they were taught a severe lesson in this second period. Waterford are, in terms of their running game, and maybe when they get a couple of guys back like Tadhg De Burke, like Éireann Daly, like maybe Pádraig Mahony, for example, to get some of those boys back, could they challenge Limerick? But I mean, they're so far out in front at the moment, and you would just feel they're going to get better as well. They get more experience, they're going to add a couple of players to their panel. The average age, as you said earlier when referencing Nicky Quaid, is still only about 25, 26. It drops again if you take him out, so it's very difficult to see where the challenge is coming from next season. You would hope that Cork will come on for the season that they've had, that Galway will surely be better in 2022 than they were this year. But a lot of it depends on whether Waterford have Liam Cahill as their manager or not, because I mean, it will be a savage blow if he leaves. And is now the right time to take over Tipperary? Are Waterford a better team? I would argue they are. So is he better equipped to win an All-Ireland as a senior manager with them than he would be Tipperary next season? In saying that, very hard to say no to your own county. Do you want to be the guy to replace Liam Sheedy?
Yeah. And there's a bit of a rebuilding job there as well, isn't there?
That's there is. That is it. Like, yeah. You know, so if Liam Cahill goes in and he's, I mean, he lays it out in no uncertain terms of this is going to be a 3 or 4 year process, and they're not ripping up trees at underage, under a minor and 20 level either. It's Cork that are doing all that at the moment. That maybe it will be a job he does fancy, and obviously he will have worked with many of those players at under 21 level with Tipperary, so he already has a very good relationship with many of those guys. If you were to put me on the spot, I would say he's more likely to be Tipperary manager next year than he is Waterford.
Yeah.
But Waterford will be doing absolutely everything they can to hold on to him, because what a brilliant job he's done with them.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of chopping and changing in Waterford the last while, so you kind of feel they would be desperate to keep him and really kick on. Maria says, in terms of newly acquired skills during my teenage years, let's go with A, talk to boys, B, drive, C, puck a ball more than 40 yards. Thanks, Maria. Although Owen makes the very valid point, Dave McIntyre has some depraved mind. The lockdown has certainly not done him any good.
I somehow have managed to end up in this situation despite asking a perfectly innocent question.
Sorry. I didn't think it was innocent, but now I'm giving you the benefit of the doubt. I thought you were just trying to do me rotten on live national radio, but it turns out you were just innocently asking a question.
Historically, I may have form in that regard, but on this occasion, it was entirely innocent.
Right, okay. Well, listen, I just didn't know what to say to you, so there you go. You caught me.
I thought my Skype connection had stopped working.
My brain started working, or stopped working, rather. So, Lee Gray still out for Rovers this week, Rich?
Yeah, it's a big blow for Rovers. They're going to be without the defender for Thursday's Conference League playoff second leg with Flora Tallinn. The defender missed last week's 4-2 defeat in Estonia with a thigh injury, and his absence was keenly felt. Rovers boss Stephen Bradley says Grace is a week or two away from full fitness. That means he might also miss their FAI Cup tie with Bohemians. Speaking of cup ties, there are 9 Premier League clubs in Carabao Cup second round action tonight. There was a 7 o'clock start at Carrow Road, where it's Norwich City 1, Bournemouth 0. Recent signing from Pauk, Christos Tsoulis, with the goal for Norwich. Andrew Omabamadele started for the host there with Adam Ida on the bench. Gavin Kilkenny is in the Bournemouth midfield. Elsewhere, there's one All Premier League clash with Watford taking on Crystal Palace. Aston Villa and Brentford both face League Two opposition tonight in Barrow and Forest Green Rovers, respectively. Leeds entertain Crewe. Wolves go to Nottingham Forest. Everton have made the trip to Huddersfield, while Brighton are away to Mick McCarthy's Cardiff. 16-year-old former Bohemians midfielder Evan Ferguson is on the bench for Brighton tonight, along with 2 other Irish teenagers. And Martin O'Faya's nephew as well, the rugby league great Odell O'Faya, is also on the Brighton bench. A very useful one for them away to Mick McCarthy's side. Most games kicking off at 7:45, apart from that one at Wolves.
Okay, what have you made of the start of the season, Dave?
Really enjoyed it. There have been an awful lot of good games. There's been plenty of gold. I don't think there's been a scoreless draw yet, has there, over the 20 games that we've seen so far? And it is nice to see a couple of sides who you would think ultimately will end up a long way down the table, starting with 2 wins from 2, like Brighton, who we've just mentioned. Brilliant to see what Shane Duffy has managed to achieve in those first 2 games. He's just resurrected his career there. Manchester United with the same old flaws. City swatting away mid-level opposition. And Tottenham, despite all their issues over the summer, have managed to start 2 from 2 as well. So I hope the rest of the season produces as much as we've seen in the opening couple of rounds. I'm not going to be making any knee-jerk reactions to what we've seen so far. Give us 5 or 6 games and we can make a more informed decision on where we see the season going. Lukaku's hit the ground running, which is, given how little he's trained, is incredible. And you wonder, by the same token, what are Rafael Varane and Jadon Sancho doing on the Manchester United bench? I mean, Tuchel was perfectly happy to fling Lukaku in there straight off the bat.
Yeah. I mean, Arsenal made it very, very welcoming for him. They just continued to confuse. I was listening to Danny Murphy making a very fair point on Arteta, because Arteta is obviously under a lot of pressure all of a sudden, and he is, you know, heading towards 2 years on the job come December, and they did spend 130 million sterling over the summer, so they are actually spending money. And admittedly, there are issues at the club which are bigger than him, but Danny Murphy was kind of drawing a parallel with Tuchel and the way he went into Chelsea and just got hold of things very quickly. And he was saying of Arteta that, you know, he won an FA Cup playing a pragmatic brand of football to a degree, and he was wondering, when you watch Arsenal at the moment, they seem to have different formations, different personnel all the time, it's all very confusing, there's no kind of consistency to it. And he was saying, why don't they just, you know, almost a la Tuchel, go back to their back three? And that suits Ben White, their new signing that they spent a lot of money on. He was like, you can be adventurous with the wing backs, you can get Sacco as a wing back, you can get Tierney as a wing back, get 2 experienced City midfielders like Partey and Xhaka, and then your 3 players ahead of them, Aubameyang, Smith Rowe, Lacazette, Pepe, whoever you want, to those 3 ahead to try and score goals, and just be really difficult to beat again and go from there and have a bit of a base the way Chelsea did under Tuchel when he first arrived. And I thought it was a very fair point. Like, you never know what team Arteta's really going to pick or how they're going to pitch up in terms of formation, or whether they're going to press or not press Steven. I don't know, I do think he is going to come under serious enough pressure now, the way things are brewing at the moment.
Well, stepping in towards that territory where the pressure really will start coming upon him, even though he's an old Arsenal favourite. The fans, now that they're back in the stadium, probably won't stand for the sort of performances we've seen in the first couple of weeks. Now, admittedly, most teams will struggle against Chelsea at home, but the performance away to Brentford on opening night was so Arsenal-like that it was depressingly familiar if you're an Arsenal supporter. And yeah, Danny Murphy makes a valid point, but when he goes through the 11 in the manner in which he did, I don't see there being the capacity within that team for them to be suddenly hard to beat. They don't have good enough defenders, they don't have enough character in the middle of the field, and their front three don't work hard enough off the ball to really make Arsenal a team that you would not relish playing at the weekend. They're so far away from being the sort of side that, say, West Ham are at the moment, that will try and run the legs off you, that will guarantee you that when you go to the City of London Stadium that you're in for a bit of a scrap and that you're probably going to have to play very well to win. That is not where Arsenal are, or even close to it at the moment.
No. It does feel, Rich, like we'll get a real glimpse of where Chelsea and Liverpool are this weekend.
Yeah, we will indeed. And Andy Robertson says he's going to be fit for Saturday's Premier League clash at Anfield. The fullback today signed a new long-term deal with Liverpool, believed to be until 2026. Robertson has missed Liverpool's first two games of the Premier League season through injury, but he's been ably deputised by Kostas Tsimikas in those two matches thus far. Premier League newcomers Brentford have signed Dundalk teenager Val Adedokun. The 18-year-old, who can play left-back and on the wing, has signed a three-year deal and goes into the Brentford's development squad, the Brentford B-side. Adedokun made his Lily White's debut last September and went on to make a total of 9 appearances for the County Louth club.
Yeah, interesting. We'll chat to Dan McDonald about that after 9 on the football show. Can we mention Tony Finau here, please?
Come on now. Tony Finau claimed the Northern Trust in New Jersey overnight. The American beat Cameron Smith in a playoff after both golfers finished the week on 20 under par. Shane Lowry ended with a tie of 11th. He finished up on 11 under par. It was a double bogey at the 10th that did him in, really. While Seamus Power and Rory McIlroy ended a weather-delayed week on 8 under and 7 under par, respectively.
Dave, Tony Finau, at last.
I have a friend of mine who knows who he is if he's listening, who almost religiously has been backing Tony Finau over the last 2 years, and pretty much every time he's told me he's a fiver each way, and I've mocked him for doing so, because yeah, he might win you some each way money, but when it comes to actually getting it done on the back nine on the Sunday, or in this case Monday evening, he just doesn't really seem to have it in him. And there he goes, the 1 week that he hasn't backed him and wins, and he hit some brilliant shots on that last 18 holes.
Yeah.
The eagle he made midway down his back nine was absolutely crucial, obviously, and it will be very interesting to see if this is a trigger for multiple wins now, or does he go back to being the Tony Finau that tends to get into contention but struggles. There was a brief mention of Seamus Power there. I think he bogeyed the 18th to slip from 69th to 72nd in the FedEx Cup standings, which is just, it's a killer for him, because he was so close to getting into the next round. Is it the BMW Championship, and really making some money. But it just shows how far he's come this year, that missing out on the second round of the FedEx Cup playoffs is a really big blow to him. He has just made unbelievable strides and finishes the season as a winner.
Yeah, he sure has. Rich, do you want to give us the last story?
Republic of Ireland under 21 boss Jim Crawford says Meepo Odebeko won't be involved in next month's Euro qualifiers. The West Ham striker hails from Tala, but he qualifies for Nigeria and could also qualify for England via the residency rules there. Crawford names his squad for the games with Bosnia and Luxembourg on Friday, but has told FAI TV today that Odebeko's name won't be on that list.
You know, what makes the big sort of news is players were left out, and I had a lot of really difficult decisions to make with players who've been involved in the last two camps. So it's not easy, but look, it has to be done. But probably the biggest talking point would be Meepo from West Ham, where, you know, Meepo's got a decision to make. He's got a choice, and, you know, our lines of communication will always be open. But he won't be involved in this camp. But probably what we should be talking about is the players who are involved. You look at the likes of Ryan Johansson, who fought tooth and nail to be part of the under-21s, and that's the type of player you need in the building. You know, players who are proud to put on the jersey and will work as hard as they can to make sure that this team can achieve as much as they possibly can in this up-and-coming campaign.
Okay, that is our news round for this evening. Dave McIntyre, we got off to a bumpy start, but we rallied wonderfully in the end. Thank you.
Yeah, we kept it steady. Thanks, lads.
Cheers. Richie McCormack, thanks as ever.
Keep it clean, Joe.
Cheers, I will.